This is the California Indian Radio Project. This program is Language, giving voice to our culture.
I started being coached quite early in my life with a male elder who knew the songs and the prayers that go to the ceremony. And he said things like, well, you know, if you want to be able to sing these songs, you have to speak our language. What if you want to make a new song? You have to be able to say what you want to say. You can't just remember the words in a song. And that was a challenge to me. And then being able to speak to God in our language was important for me.
What people often feel is that their language is the basis of their value system, and that the language holds values. And in this day and age, when a lot of California Indians feel like somehow this value system that they once had has been taken away from them, very often the first thing they look to gain it back is the language.
All the directionalities and all the different little suffixes and things like that that fit in our language have to do with the land, and the land has to do with religion, and you really can't even conceive of it in English because we don't use those same terms in English. You don't see yourself centered in the same way you do in your own religion and in your own language.
That was Lauren Bommelin, Leanne Hinton, and Nancy Richardson Steele talking about the importance of native languages. I'm Susan Newstead. The rich resources and rugged terrain of California enabled many different communities of Native people to live relatively isolated from each other. In this way, over the centuries, their separate languages continued to thrive until these communities were disrupted by disease, murder, and the forced relocation and acculturation brought by invading Spanish and Americans. As whole communities were lost, so were their languages. The children of the people who remained were usually sent to boarding school and forced to speak English, so that in recent years, only a few elders in their 70s and 80s are still fluent in their native languages. There's now a strong effort among many tribes to revitalize those languages and pass them along to a new generation. Dr. Leanne Hinton is a professor of linguistics at the University of California, Berkeley. She is director of the Survey of California and Other Indian Languages and has worked for the past several years with California Indians who want to bring back their languages.
In California, there's not a single language that kids know. There's at least 50 languages that still have speakers, and that's down from at least 80 languages that used to be in California. It's one of the most diverse places linguistically in the whole world. Michael Krause of the University of Alaska has postulated that probably 50% of the languages of the world are going to disappear in the next 50 years or so because they aren't being spoken by children. So this is not just a California phenomenon. We have the dubious distinction of being the state with the most endangered languages of any state in the Union, simply because we have the most languages. The boarding school experience was definitely one of the key factors in language loss in California and elsewhere. What happened was that the kids would go to boarding school and they would get punished for using their language, and they would get told that their language was no good and that English was the language that they should speak. And some people, despite that, kept their language, but in almost every case, what boarding school did was it created a generation who ended up not teaching the language to their kids, and their kids ended up not knowing any of it.
One of the people helping to revitalize the native languages is Agnes Vera. She's a master teacher of Yalumni in the Master Apprentice Language Learning Program and lives on the Tule River Reservation in the southern Sierra foothills. Although she went to boarding school, she managed to keep her language.
I grew up speaking the language with my mother. She lived with us for years, and I spoke the language with her, but the children never learned. I guess we didn't really speak in front of them or something. I don't know what happened. But anyway, they didn't learn till after she died. Then that's when one of my sons asked me to help him learn the language. And the first thing we did was learn prayers. And then after that, we went around the house and learned all those kinds of sayings inside. And then we went outdoors and did the same thing for walks and camping and going to town and going to play bingo. And all of these things, we talked the native language.
Nancy Richardson Steele is Karuk, from the Klamath River area of Northern California. She was involved in helping to start the Master Apprentice Program and helps train Master Apprentice teams in many parts of the United States. She's also an apprentice in the Karuk language.
I started working on the language about when I was about 15, around 70, 71, and they had a program at Humboldt State about then. And then later I went through different programs, and the programs often turned out to be very beautiful programs, but they weren't creating real speakers. I found that there's this huge, huge difference between studying about language and speaking language. And so what we did for all those years, you know, at Humboldt State was we tried to document language and record language, and we tried to study language, but we weren't enhancing the spoken language just for speaking purposes, you know, to get people speaking in their homes, to get a person to just talk, but not memorize things, but begin talking again. And that was the most effective thing so far that I've seen.
Lauren Bommelin is Talawa and lives on the far north coast of California. He teaches Talawa at the high school and is a member of the tribal council.
We had a very strong organization in the community at the time, named the Del Norte Indian Welfare Association. And it was formed in 1929, and it ran until 1976. Well, out of this energy that was coming out of the Del Norte Indian Welfare Association, we actually started language classes. They did. I was a child. I was in seventh grade, and we met every Wednesday at the high school. And the elders that were able would come to the class on Wednesdays for fifth and sixth period of the day, and we would start writing down words. And they would start reminiscing and talking, and, oh, that's right, and, yeah, this is how you, yeah, uh-huh, you know, and so forth. And then finally, by the time I was a junior, actually became an elective in the high school.
Darlene Franco is Wukchumni, living in the southeastern edge of the San Joaquin Valley. She is Language Program Director for Advocates for Indigenous California Language Survival, or ICLS, based in Visalia. ICLS coordinates several different projects to revitalize native languages.
Growing up as a child, I only heard my mother speak when she was speaking to my grandma or to other elders, and it was just once in a while. So I never got to learn the language until I got older. I realized I wanted to learn, and I wanted to carry these traditions on, to carry the language on. I started getting involved with our ceremonies. And when I was pregnant with my first child, who's now 14, my husband and I asked my mother if she would honor us by giving him a naming ceremony and naming him in the traditional way that we used to do. So he was given his name, which is Lahosai, and it means happiness, and that is the name of my great-grandfather. So he's carrying on that name, and we had a ceremony for him, and this is the first time a ceremony like this had been done in 50 or more years.
This desire to bring the language back into everyday life was one of the reasons ICLS was formed in 1992. ICLS' most dramatic success so far has been the development of the Master Apprentice Language Learning Program. Leanne.
One of the reasons the Master Apprentice Program got developed was because of a statement that was made once by Julian Lang, who's Karuk. He said, look, all we have left are maybe 10 or 12 speakers of Karuk, and they're all in their 70s and 80s. So in 20 years, there won't be any speakers left. But what if we had a couple of 30-year-old speakers of Karuk? Then the language would survive for an extra 50 years. So that's sort of the first step, is just to get the language surviving. in the heads of one or two people. What people want, though, is for these languages to become the language of communication for a community again. And so people don't really have a dream that we're going to have one speaker for 50 years. They have a dream that they're going to be able to use that language as their language of communication within the community. And that's the next step. And that's much harder than getting one or two speakers.
The Master Apprentice Program selects the teams, provides stipends so that they can spend 10 to 20 hours a week together over several months during the year, and holds weekend workshops to train the Master Apprentice teams.
We show them in this weekend workshop how to live their daily lives together in the language, where it, let's say they're going to just cook a meal. You know, how do you cook this meal without using any English and just turn it into a language lesson? And so the speaker has to learn how to do things like, say, get the potatoes from the cupboard and use gestures so that the learner will know what is meant. Or now we're cutting the potatoes while showing the learner what's going on. One of the first things that the learner has to learn is how to ask questions in the language. So we don't want the learner to say in English, how do you say spoon in our language? We want the learner to ask that in Wintu or in Pomo or whatever the language is that the learner is using. It would be much better if we could work with them for weeks or months on end, but since everybody lives in different parts of the state, they just have to go home after this workshop and they're on their own. There's staff people that communicate with them on a regular basis by telephone, and they try to go at least once a year to go visit them and see how they're doing. But they pretty much have to work on their own. And as a result, they very often it's the teams themselves that develop some of the methods for language teaching and language learning that then get incorporated back into the Master Apprentice Program.
Master Violet Super with Apprentice Terry Supahan.
Pamuyikya ushuri.
Agnes Vera helped develop some of these techniques of using everyday life while she was teaching her son Matt.
I thought the first thing that they could learn would be in the house, you know, because that was everyday living. So that's how I taught it. Everything in the house, from bedroom to kitchen to eating, getting up and helping outside, you know, wash clothes or whatever. I tried to include everything that's in our house.
By Aunt Agnes teaching everyday living, they're going to use it every day when they get up.
Darlene Franco.
They're going to go outside and they're going to chop wood or whatever it is they have to do. And they're going to know how to do it in Yolemne. And they're going to be able to carry it on. And I think that's one of the uniquenesses about our Master Apprentice Program. When you're being immersed in the language and learning things that you're going to use, that's going to help make the language living again because they're going to use it every day. They're not going to just learn about words or learn about objects that they're not going to use.
And not to just use words. Say it in a sentence. I wouldn't say chair. I'd say this is a chair. You sit on the chair. You know, go on with it. Kihuloshi, huluska. Huluska is one word, just sit down. It says the whole thing, that one word, huluska. Woulga, stand up. Just one word.
Not everybody can succeed because it takes an enormous amount of commitment on the part of the learner, the apprentice. Takes a lot of time and a lot of energy and a lot of dedication. You have to work through a lot of frustration in order to get to the point where you can communicate at all or even understand sometimes what the speaker is saying. But those that are able to take the time and have that sort of aggressive energy to learn the language have been able to do it quite well. So there are a lot of languages in California now that have one or two more speakers that are maybe in their 20s or 30s instead of speakers that are just in their 70s and 80s, which is the case with most California languages now.
One of the major controversies that arises in speaking a language that is not in constant use is the question of what to call new things. Nancy Richardson Steele.
If you're going to be doing language, you've got to be able to express your feelings and express yourself. In Karuk, they do it in two ways. One way, they'll do it similar to the Hawaiians, where they will karukicize the word, you know, like ayan for ironing, you know. But sometimes when we're describing a place, like Junia and I were describing, well, how do you talk about going to the bank or to the gas station, you know? And we would just describe it like the place that keeps your money or the place where your car takes a drink or something, you know, when it's our oral language. As long as the communication happens and people understand what you're talking about, then that word is completely fine.
I asked Agnes what she would call my tape recorder.
Well, I just use the chiyahalalis, you know, that's to speak in it, you know, something that you speak in.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Just like your TV, there's no word for that either, but we just call it otsalis, you know, something that you watch.
Writing a language that has always been oral provides another challenge. Leanne.
One thing that comes up a lot in language revitalization is writing. Most of the languages of California don't have writing systems. Now, you can write them using phonetic transcription, and that's what linguists have been doing for the last 100 years. But what about a writing system that people can really use? And what role can or should a writing system play in language survival and language revitalization?
We have a couple of consonants that don't exist in English, so there was nothing available.
Lauren Bommelin.
There was an article about Tom Parsons coming from the Center for Community Development at Humboldt State University, and he was up writing the Hoopa language. You go, oh my goodness, if he can write Hoopa, he can write Smith River, because it's the same historic language way back thousands of years ago. And so they have those phonemes too. And he came up and was helping to write stuff down in this thing that we developed called Unifon. And that's when I first saw our language written down literally, you know, because before that, what you knew was in your head, just like any oral language, but then all of a sudden it was like you could visualize it written on the chalkboard. And then I remember the first time that a page was typed, it was like, wow, the word yes, the word no. You know, just the most simple things. It was like to see your language in writing for the first time was really amazing.
But writing also can create a barrier for language learning. And so in the Master Apprentice program, for example, we tend to discourage the use of writing at all because it can be used just as a crutch where people will say, I'm going to write down all the words we learned today and look at them. Well, you look at them and you may not be able to pronounce them accurately. And so people who want to learn their language, if they've got the opportunity to work with a speaker, they're best off just working with that speaker, ignoring writing altogether, doing a lot of tape recording and learning orally and by ear rather than by writing.
If the languages are to survive, they must be learned by people of all ages. Leanne.
Probably the most effective way to get lots of speakers is through school programs. There's very few places where a school consists primarily of Indians of a particular tribe in California. In general, the California Indians are a very tiny minority in a school that is mostly white, say, or possibly intertribal. So whether we can really do real immersion programs in the future to get kids speaking isn't really clear.
A few high schools provide native language classes that satisfy the state foreign language requirements for graduation. One of the techniques that Lauren Bommelin uses to teach his Talawa 1 and 2 classes at Del Norte County High School is TPR, Total Physical Response.
When, you know, the way you don't teach language is you don't pick up something and say, this cone is called chelange. You know, this pencil is called marchet erge. That's wrong because you're mixing their mind up. the best way to just hold him and say, Dihan, Taiwa Ushi, Hiwa Ushi Machetersh, and talk to him in the language. So they identify that as Machetersh and not as a pencil called Machetersh. See? So that's the idea of TPR. So if I can get him to sit up, stand up, sit down, pick something up, put it down, put it in there, take it out, make a choice of this or that, or modify it and call it, you know, red, yellow, black, big, small, long, thin, whatever. They're manipulating the language, and they have to think of how to conjugate that. So that's TPR.
Families are now beginning to encourage their young children to speak the language at home.
One of the stories I like to tell is about a woman named Jean Perry, who's been raising her kid to speak Yurok as much as possible. And that child got to preschool, came home one day saying, I got all embarrassed today because I thought it was a churri and it's a teddy bear and everybody laughed at me and I'm not going to speak Yurok anymore. And so she refused to speak Yurok until a few months later they held a brush dance for her. And this was a ceremonial validation that was so important to her that the next time I saw her, she was very much in favor of speaking Yurok. So there's lots of things families can do to help their children feel that the language is important. And that's a very important part of it as well.
Darlene.
What we do in my home is we try to communicate as much as possible. When I call my kids, you know, I say, Pakin Keo, you know, come here. When my husband's telling them to do something, he tries to tell them in Wukchumni so that they hear it all the time. And then they speak to each other and they're not ashamed to talk to their friends.
A few communities have been able to start immersion preschools. These children attend the Wukchumni preschool. But how do you learn a language if there are no fluent speakers left? A few years ago, Leanne and several other people working with ICALS developed a week-long workshop called Breath of Life, Silent No More, to help people whose languages have no speakers.
Each year has just gotten better and better. And the bonding that is formed by those people that are coming together and, you know, have been so devastated because they don't have anybody that speaks their language, but they feel a spiritual tie and a spiritual pull towards learning their culture and their language. And to come together with other people who are in the same bind, they really form some, you know, tremendous bonds with each other.
We invite 20 California Indians to come, and we have all kinds of research assistants and archivists on hand to help them. And we show them where the materials are on their languages that have been collected by linguists. I mean, Berkeley is the best place in the world to come and study a California Indian language because linguists and anthropologists have been studying California languages for over 100 years now. So all their field notes, all their tapes, their publications, they're all there at the university. So there's a wonderful set of archives to work with. So we show the participants where the materials on their language are. And we teach them a little bit about basic linguistics so that they can pronounce what they're seeing on paper, for example. And they can simply use these skills and their knowledge now of where the materials are and how to access them to help themselves learn the language or to help make teaching materials or whatever the project is they want to do.
At the end of the week, we always have something where you can share with each other and do a little presentation for your whole group. That first year, there was a conversation by two Salinan people who had come. They did their research, they found language, and they were able to hold a conversation in their language, in a language that hadn't been spoken in more than 50 years.
Darlene was able to find a notebook from someone who had documented her great-grandmother.
And I've never met her other than what my mother's told me about her. And there was a ceremony that we do when our people pass away. And my mother has taught me the ceremony, and she's taught me how to say it, how to do things in the English version. But there were also some things that my great-grandmother would say in Indian. My mother would always try to remember. She couldn't remember. I found it recorded. and it was documented by my great-grandmother. So when I seen that, I was just so overwhelmed, and I just started crying in the middle of the library. But it's just such an awesome feeling to feel that. And actually, I could feel her presence with me at that time. So it's, you know, what these people experience for a full week with each other is really good.
But often, those who are working to bring back the languages feel they are working against overwhelming odds.
There's just no room for the languages anymore. And this is something that's happening all over the world. California doesn't have to feel like it's alone. It's because of everything that goes on in our daily lives that is discouraging the use of any language other than English. Some of it is the attitude of our country. You know, we don't believe that bilingualism is possible. Somehow we feel like everybody either speaks English or some other language, but the idea of both seems like a concept that Americans can't understand. So there's attitudes that are really against the language. But beyond attitudes, we are bathed in English every moment of every day. We have television on in English. We have this radio show on in English. Everything is going on in English. So where can we make the place for other languages to exist? Sometimes I get very discouraged about the prospects of language survival in California and in America. And the only thing that really gets me going again is when I go to a language conference, as I sometimes go to, that is attended primarily by California Indians, and see the passion that those people have that come to the conference for their language, and see the extreme willingness that a lot of individuals have to devote their entire lives at the cost of economic security and many other things, to devote that to keeping their languages alive. And when you see that kind of spirit, then you get uplifted and feel maybe it's not totally impossible.
Language in itself is a very powerful thing. Anytime that you speak language, it's like a religious act. You know, you're evoking something that's very unique to culture and people. And in any way possible that you can do it, then you just have to do it. Juni always says, don't be afraid, my child, wherever you go. You know, with our language, we're strong.
Language, giving voice to our culture. This program was written and produced by Susan Newstead. Executive producer, Peggy Berryhill. Project director, Roby Cook. Digital editing and mixing, Neil Harvey. Thanks to Koljedimo for the use of their music in the opening theme and other places throughout this program. Thanks also to the Wukchumni Immersion Preschool for their song. This program is a project of Northern California Cultural Communications with funds provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. For the California Indian Radio Project, I'm Neil Harvey.
To order a cassette tape of this program or a resource guide with more information about the people and topics we've covered, call 1-800-461-3991. That's 1-800-461-3991. Or visit our website at flickerfeather.org.
This program is distributed by the American Indian Radio on satellite, a service of Native American Public Telecommunications.